Hello, this is Raymond, Saratech Customer Service, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year. May 2011 be a blessed year for you.
Comments made on the Saratech Podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Saratech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the latest Saratech Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Saratech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deaf-blind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Saratech Tech Chat 83, 2010 Highlights and Letdowns. Our guests today are J.J. Meadow with BlindBargains.com. Hello, Mr. J.J.
Hello.
Jamie Pauls, who's the host of Main Menu over at ACB Radio. Thank you for joining me today, Jamie.
Glad to be with you today.
A few quick reminders. Today, December 30, is the last day for your chance to register to win one of three gift cards from Saratech. Just email your name, email address, and your favorite podcast or tech chat for 2010 to resources at Saratech.com. Coming up in 2011 Tech Chats, we're going to do a few on exercise. We're going to talk about some innovations having to do with touch screens, mice, braille, and tactile feedback devices, and a lot of other surprises. And one of the big ones I'm kind of excited about is we're going to roll our own voice chat system and get away from Skype. The 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act. What difference, if any, do you think this law is going to make for us?
This is JJ. Honestly, there's been a lot of hype surrounding the act, and I'm really definitely glad to see it pass. I'm pessimistic at this point. I mean, just after seeing how long it's taken for some of the provisions of the Americans with Disabilities Act to go through, and a lot of the vagueness that exists as far as we have to go through some various studies to figure out what exactly is accessible. It's going to be a while. This is definitely not the end all to anything. Some would argue that legislation isn't even the best solution. There are some manufacturers who get it, and maybe we definitely still need to work on education of manufacturers as far as getting them to realize the importance of accessibility and not just let legislation and expect that to do all the work for you. So that's going to take a long time. So we need to, in the meantime, still advocate for ourselves and for the appliances and technology that we believe we need.
Jamie, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I think that one-on-one contact with developers, I know it's really encouraging when you look at the iOS applications for the iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, to watch those people on Twitter and to be able to interact with them and say, hey, can you work on the accessibility with this product and or this app? And they say, sure. You know, so I think we actually can see a little bit of positive feedback and some encouraging signs. And obviously, that's a very small area, maybe. But there are some you know, big corporations that are a little harder to get to. But I still think that user feedback is important.
Okay, I want to ask your thoughts on the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act. Do you think this law was necessary? And have you, either of you personally, had a close call with one of the more silent vehicles?
I actually did do advocacy with the NFB as far as helping to get this passed. And I'm definitely glad to see it happen. I'm a little unfortunate that it's going to take a couple years for everything to be implemented. I was skeptical at first, thinking that, oh, you know, quiet cars, you can hear them, and they really aren't that bad. And then I ended up participating in a couple research studies where we had hybrid vehicles and non-hybrid vehicles going past us, and we had to basically indicate when we heard the vehicles approaching. And there are some definite issues with some of the really quiet hybrids, especially if you're on a halfway busy street corner. Especially with vehicles perhaps making a right turn in front of you, which is how a lot of accidents happen. And it's not just for blind people, of course. It's for bicyclists and others that do rely on sound. And with the studies that have already come out as far as the higher amount of crashes and fatalities with hybrids, I do think this was necessary.
Jamie, your thoughts on it?
I have not been around a hybrid vehicle at all, but I mean, it just kind of, it stands to reason that work needs to be done in this area. I mean, it's pretty obvious how an accident could occur, not just for blind people, I don't think, but I mean, I can see that just for anyone, maybe, there are some legitimate concerns there.
Right, as we talked about, not only children, but people not paying attention on their cell phones, any number of things that could come into play. So our next topic, there's a few different stories here. I want to know your thoughts on structured negotiations, if and when you feel that's necessary, or if you'd rather just see folks try to work it out directly with industry. And I guess the first one being Major League Baseball.
I have no comment there at all. As far as the concept itself, I mean, it sounds like the idea of structured negotiations sounds like a great idea and, you know, a lot less threatening and perhaps a lot less confrontational than going to court. I mean,
JJ, certainly have an opinion on that.
Not much. Well, on baseball, not too much. I'm glad to see.
We'll just go back to structured negotiations, but that whole concept of when is it time to get lawyers involved? When is it time to say, hey, we tried as individuals, but that's not working. I think
there's a couple of examples that will come up further up down the list when it may be necessary later on with Microsoft and Windows Phone 7 or with Amazon and Kindle, things like that, where it doesn't seem like there's any, especially with Microsoft, it doesn't seem like there's any effort being made, and all they're giving us is lip service, then it definitely might be time to make some things happen. When there's that proverbial brick wall that you feel like you're up against it and everything else has been tried.
Well, that's a really good point. Interesting observation as we talk here about some of the successes, and of course these are put forward by Lainey Feingold. We can also look at the things that we need to be putting our efforts into in 2011 to make things better. We've got accessible credit reports. Now, I think that may be one of the biggest ones personally in terms of numbers of people. When we all need this service, whether it be to prevent issues of identity theft or just find out what's going on, if there's wrong information, and most people do have wrong information on their credit report because of just bad computer data entry. And then there's the other ones you could read there about web accessibility in terms of the Department of Justice and new U.S. talking ATM legislation, although we understand they're still not in Hawaii for our folks. And
Social Security is the accessible statements there was a big deal. I don't know if it's on the list, but that was a big deal, especially considering that not everyone has the technology to read their mail as it comes. Not everyone has a KNFB reader or DocuScanner, things like that. So it's important that they were forced to recognize the need to provide that information, because that does serve quite a few blind people.
That and some of that documentation just simply does not scan well.
A very good point. I did seem to overlook that very important milestone to get the materials now in Braille. And then, of course, also Best Buy and some other folks throughout the year agreeing to install the tactile point of sale devices. Have either of you used those?
I have not.
It doesn't do much. I mean, until they put Braille labels on buttons to let you know or give you audio instructions to tell you how to use them, I still end up having to ask someone to make sure I'm completing my transaction. So still some work to be done there.
So would you say it's futile, or is it? It can be, with a few more modifications, be made.
It's not on my highest priorities, considering the 5 seconds it takes, because there's always someone behind the counter to say, hey, which button do I press for okay? So I mean, it definitely would be nice to have, but. And, in the scheme of all the things that we like to have, it's not the highest priority for me.
Okay, on the NFB front, and I know there's an opinion or two here, let's start first with the NFB Blind Driver Challenge. I didn't realize that was a download. So before we talk about Blio, do any of you have any thoughts on this concept of pursuing the concept of blind people driving, whether it's NFB or Google's efforts or efforts also being made in the EU? Is this practical? Are you more concerned about it carrying over to other technologies? Or do you really think, based on the three different events that we've heard of this year, that driving, at least for some, if not all, is a realistic expectation?
I think that it could be really easy to discount it and to say that's kind of a silly thing to pursue. But number one, I think that it can carry over into some other areas. And number two, if people don't pursue these things, then there is never a hope that there will be any developments. I think sometimes people do have to push the envelope. Maybe 95% of the population thinks that's a silly idea. But for those five people who are serious, I think it was probably in 2009, I got an email from a guy named Harry Brown. He wanted to talk about blind people driving a car. And I remember thinking, well, that should be interesting. But, you know, I'll give the guy an interview. He was very intelligent, very articulate. He believed in what he was saying and had some interesting things to say. And I enjoyed visiting with him.
Is that on the main menu archives?
It is, actually.
Okay, good. Well, let folks check that out.
You know, exactly what Jamie's been saying on many fronts. It's blind people aren't going to be probably driving cars down the freeway in the next 5-10 years, maybe not even in our lifetimes. And much of that's going to have to do with society's perception of, is this really safe? And, you know, frankly, I would be a little scared to do it. But the residual applications that will come out of this as far as being able to detect nearby objects or being able to navigate and, or provide navigational information to people, that's what's going to be huge here. You look at the military and how they develop GPS systems, and who would have thought of all the benefits that have come off that, everything from navigation to police and fire to all sorts of other things. So it is often the side benefits that will mean a lot more than the actual blind person driving a car. That being said, during a demonstration, the NFB is down in Daytona at the end of January, and having a demonstration like that at Daytona International Speedway of a blind person driving a car, where lots of people will at least see that, and it will at least make them think about it.
Yeah, if the intentions are right, and it's not just to promote membership in a strange sort of way, but we'll see what happens here. It's an interesting concept,
yep.
And yeah. I was more intrigued with the stories that I read, what Google was doing with it. But again, it's all things that can pass along to driver safety, to have the vehicle correct for human error, someone falling to sleep or not picking up on something because they're on their cell phone. But as we talk about the top tech stories and assistive tech stories, we also have to talk about some of the letdowns of the year. And of course, JJ, you have Blind Bargains. You have a top 10 list. You're rolling out one every day. But certainly number one in the letdown category for me personally would be the Blio. I mean, it's just hard to understand how
yes.
an organization who, for the blind, partnered with someone and didn't have their hands in it deep enough to see the problems coming forth. It just boggles my mind, but I'll start with you, JJ.
Right, because the release, I mean, this was announced right about this time last year, and we saw it even coming a little before that. And it was promised for a February release, and it gets pushed back to May, then June, and then September. And even in September, when it was released, the client is not accessible. This is just wrong on so many levels. And even by the time they get an accessible client out, you don't hear the mainstream press talking about Blio like they were a year ago. A year ago, they were pretty excited. And at this point, there's plenty of other solutions on the market. It's just going to be another literati. I mean, I don't see it really catching on. They're going to have to do some very groundbreaking things to make this work at all. It's very disappointing, and yeah, it's definitely one of the stories that's coming up on the top 10.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was such a – do you have any thoughts on it, Jamie?
Not really. I mean, there's almost nothing to say. I mean, it's become – well, I hate to say a joke, but I don't know how else to express that.
It's the next Horatio.
It is. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, we'll get to the mighty Horatio coming up. So one other thing I want to mention, I guess this wasn't 2010 in that it was announced in 2009, but I think most people really didn't get it into their hands until 2010. And so I think as far as one piece of access technology that we've added to our arsenals, I would say would be the iBill. And I know, JJ,
I
you moved quite a few of those at conventions and so forth.
Yeah. So I'm obviously a little biased, but I definitely saw a lot of people who were using it for all sorts of things, just from gaining their independence to helping them to run their online, their businesses and other things like that. So I saw it being used for a lot of different things and was definitely glad to see it. It took them a while. We're starting to get a little worried about them, too, because they were promising it around this time last year, and then it got pushed back to February, and not everyone even got their pre-orders till June. So hopefully they can learn from that next time they release a product. I know the demand was much more than they anticipated at first.
On other topics here, Have either of you played with the new Envision ID Mate Summit and have any comments on that device?
I held one.
You held one?
Good.
To the extent that it looks just like the Omni, and except it's a little scaled down. It's for people who prefer that portable solution, and there are a lot of people who do. It's gotten tiny enough to the point now where it's not a hindrance to carry around. I think these portable solutions are going to become the best when they're able to meld a barcode scanner, but then still make it use an online component at the same time. You have barcode scanners on phones, but then they're relying on the camera, so they aren't working as well. So at some point, if you can get the best of both worlds, that's where you're really going to have the next big advance. So the Summit wasn't really a huge advance in barcode technology. It's smaller. It's lighter. If you already had an Omni, it may not be worth an upgrade. But it is good to see the product that is still in development.
And it is a lot of money. There are some other ways to accomplish this, I guess. The people who want a standalone device that they can walk in and actually scan products on the shelves. But I know you are involved in some alternate means in accomplishing this. And, of course, we've had the launch of Directions for Me, so we'll talk about that. And I asked you in an earlier
text. And Digitize soon.
Digitize, getting into that space? Okay. So any thoughts on, I know you said then that Directions for Me, because I asked if they were reinventing the wheel, and you said actually no, they were putting a lot of things under one umbrella and one website for people to go to instead of having to traverse through the internet to a variety of different sites to get the same information.
They are adding more information to that, though, that wasn't around before. Some of the major websites, say like Betty Crocker or General Mills, they had a lot of their information online, or you can get it through Amazon or NetGrocer. But when you're looking especially at some of the store brands and some of the off-brand items, they do have a lot. I think it's over 300,000 products, and it is definitely nice to have it in one spot, and it's one of the best new resources for the blind that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, so hats off to all the folks that put that together. And Jamie, guys, just chime in anytime. I won't call on you specifically because I know some of you have stronger opinions about certain things versus others. Next one here, the RFID Read Here Player for both Mac and Windows. Never played with it. Any thoughts on that?
Nor have I.
Neither have I. I think it's great that a product is being released for Mac and Windows. I think we're going to see more of that.
There's a little catch that if you wanted both, you had to pay $20 for the second one. That wasn't a very publicized fact, which they're a little more open there. But other than that.
Yeah.
Good point, because many people that do have PCs and Macs, there are a few who have dropped their PC to go solely to the Mac, but that's a very good point. Linux 3.0, I don't know if any of you guys play with Linux. I've never messed with it. I haven't messed with Ubuntu for a while. I got tired of the screen reader Orca crashing. Although it wasn't hard to get it restarted, but I don't know. I just maybe someday we'll go back and play around in Linux land. ThermoWorks Instant Retalking Thermometer. JJ, I know you've done some coverage of that. You have one? So talk about that device.
It works. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's inexpensive, about $30. And yeah, it will measure temperatures up to about 500 degrees. I stuck it in our oven a couple weeks ago just to see if it really did, kind of just through the door. And yeah, it basically measured the temperature of the oven. I cooked a Christmas ham in the crock pot and used it there. So compared to the previous talking portable thermometers, this one seems a lot more accurate, a lot more stable and high built or well built. And so it's worth the $30 if you do much of any cooking at all, any grilling, things like that.
Okay, either of you have a need or know someone using the Solo V2 blood pressure and glucose monitor, fully talking menus. And I know that a lot of the agencies that recommend these devices for people are recommending it now. But, of course, like with all of these, the device itself is nothing because you have to have proprietary strips to use it.
Mm-hmm. Right, I have not had any reason to use it. That's interesting.
Yeah, any thoughts on the DICE talking AM/FM HD radio? I got to play with it at ACB in Phoenix. It was kind of okay, but I don't know that I'd spend the money on it.
Yeah, what else is it? Does it read the digit, like the song titles and things on the display?
No, it just reads frequencies.
Yeah.
And it only reads it only reads the odd number ones, as I recall. So if you were on 88.4, you wouldn't know that until you got on 88.3. And then it didn't have clickable detents, so you had to, you know, you would literally just move the dial very slightly to go to HD1, HD2, HD3. So if you had any limits in motor skills or sound quality was okay. I don't know. I heard the reception on the units isn't stellar, but...
That was $250, and I bought a... I know the one I bought was components, so I had to plug it into speakers, but that was $75.
Exactly.
So
I bought the Sony 79, which had much, much better reception.
Yep, the one that we reviewed. It's a great radio.
Yes, definitely. A weird story is earlier about the Ocean Blue talking set-top box. Jamie, did you do any coverage of that on Main Menu? Starting
actually,
in the UK and maybe something coming to the States?
We did not. We probably need to take a look at that in the coming year.
Okay, yeah, maybe more so when, you know, when something is ready to show in the States.
Right.
Another story.
You know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm noticing that a bit because there are... I kind of live in our little bubble over here in the U.S., and there are some products that have been released over in Europe or in other other countries, various Braille displays. You know, it took us a year or two to get the Sika, for example, and we maybe need to do a little better job of looking at these international products that are coming out instead of waiting for a company to bring it over here.
I agree.
There is more technology out there than what we're seeing.
That is a good point. So, and Serotech, and I'm sure even Main Menu or JJ, with, you know, looking for either writers or other people to participate and share and do product reviews when you have unique technologies that have only been introduced into your country or continent, you know, and share it with the world because it's important. You know, then we can advocate, you know, for greater adoption to get these devices out. One we haven't seen much fanfare on, and I suspect a lot of that is the price and maybe marketing, but it's the VI Scientific, which a cool concept, a Vision Hunt color identifier, light probe, and currency identifier. They started out Nokia, and of course they've come out with one for iOS devices. It's kind of in the $69 price range. I did get a copy of it, and I've played with it, and it functions.
It needs work.
Yeah, it does need work. Okay, I'm going to let you comment. I'm always leery to comment on something because I know the 3GS sometimes doesn't perform as well with devices like that as you might get on the iPhone 4, but give me your observations, JJ.
Well, Matt just sends me over a message on Messenger. iPhone version is kind of broken. I remember when I had it on my Nokia, the first version, he said, yeah, well, it works well, but it won't detect $1 bills. And so, see, they fixed that problem, or that was a known problem, but he chose to release it anyway. He fixed that. The light probe and a couple of those things are kind of cool. The currency identification need kind of fell by the wayside when the iBill came out about the same time. It does do euros and some other currencies. It needs work. I've seen them. It kind of reminds me of, you remember when, was it Premier Technologies or whatever, they released their suite of text cloner and those scanning software, and they were all kind of cool ideas, but they just really didn't work that well. None of them did.
Talking checkbook, I kind of played with that. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
Okay, it wasn't my, you know, and I didn't want to review it because I'm like, this is not working, but maybe it's me, but I like to, you know, get a true observation of, you know, great concept, guys. You may be a little too late to the party, though, because all this stuff has been put together in other technologies.
You know, a color identifier for the iPhone, if it works right and it was reasonably priced, would be cool. I'm not sure if $70 is that price. I would think maybe more like 20 or 30.
Well, Ricky Inger is the master of a few different devices with strengths and weaknesses of each. But so that's kind of covered, and I think some folks have even done currency, although I think much more feasible to do the iBill real quickly when you're in a cab. You're not going to sit there and scan with an iPhone and you know, try to work that out. A few other things. Let's talk about accessible games this year. I'm not familiar with this, the VI Fit project. JJ, kind of what was going on there? They had bowling and tennis and...
What they did, and I haven't tried this, and maybe I will now if I can get a Wii remote. But they basically, you compare that with a computer, is my understanding. So you can, and they wrote basically audio games which use the Wiimote to promote fitness amongst the blind, which is really cool. The actual execution of the games is a bit amateurish, but the concept is there, and it definitely shows that there's a possibility for creating some more accessible games that are doing more than just people pressing buttons.
Now, the other big thing was the RS games, of course, they come out with four. Two recent additions, what is do Blackjack, they have Yahtzee and Uno and Monopoly. Very big in the Samnet chat rooms. And I know, JJ, you run the Zone BBS. Is that something people are doing, actually getting together and playing games?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, including me. We have chat rooms for all the games, and they've definitely become quite popular, probably definitely the most popular games of the year. RS Games won Best Accessible Game last year for Monopoly, so I definitely know they caught on really quickly.
Does anyone know anything about the Dancing.Interactive music stand?
I do not, actually.
I saw it. I felt it because
you groped it.
It's a large print device. That's why I say that. It's a really cool idea for being able to enlarge music and enhance. It's meant to bring into like a band class, things like that. I don't know a lot about it, but it does seem like a very innovative solution for students who want to be able to read their music in real time and move around. You can jump to measures or certain spots in the track. You know, it comes a little pricey, but it's the type of thing that definitely an agency or somebody would purchase anyway. So, and it's definitely a cool option to have. Blind people have been able to use Braille displays for Braille music.
It's a very miscellaneous story. You guys can just chime in anytime you think something here is worth comment. But CSUN offers the first master's degree in access technology. AFB announces a new Access World editor. Do you believe the quality of the publication has improved with that change? Any thoughts on that?
I have to confess, I haven't read it for a while. And I was looking at this list, it was kind of an uh-oh moment. I like Access World a lot. I think Twitter and podcasts, it's just, you know, it's kind of hard to keep up with everything, but I definitely need to give it. I think the written word is very important, and I think there is something to be said for that. I mean, the audio material is great, but when someone can actually articulate in print, if you will, or Braille, or however you want to put that, a thought, I think that there's definitely a need for an Access World there.
I'm a little biased here because I have been contributing some articles to Access World.
Maybe that's why it seems better.
Matt's saying,
yeah, absolutely.
Well, I do appreciate. I like that they went to a monthly format. I think that does make things a little more pertinent. Matt says he thinks the articles have gotten a little more unbiased. Like you said, the written word is very important because you can't express everything in 140 characters, and it's nice to be able to go back. I've been doing research for articles and things on Blind Bargain. It's nice to go back to an Access World article from 5 years ago, which basically articulates how the industry was at that time. So it's really important, I think, to have that kind of written record and written history of tech.
Exactly, because audio, there's no, unless we develop a great transcription service, it depends on you having the time and motivation to find it. And how do we deal with podcast overload? I mean, there's a lot of great stuff I miss. I mean, I can't stay on all podcasts consistently.
I just let somebody else listen, and they'll post on Twitter if they hear anything good. Because I don't have time to listen to all these podcasts. Oh,
you know, exactly. That's funny that you say that, because that's exactly what I do. I don't subscribe to a whole lot of RSS feeds anymore. If a Twitter post catches my attention, I'll download it right then.
I'm the kind of the same way, so maybe that's something for us to think about. You know, as we, especially Jamie and myself, as we oversee podcasts, is how to come up with that right wording to get people's attention, to get them to come over and check out the, you know, if you're doing product reviews or really hitting on a key story or topic that people are interested at the given time.
And the one thing we do forget about, too, and we've gotten this comment on the Blind Bargains audio interviews, is the deafblind population. They're easily overlooked. We do it all the time, and they do get left out of a lot of this.
A great example for written word, and why I'd still like to see some kind. I've really looked at one that they just wanted too much money. It just wasn't feasible, for our podcast, which is still an arm of a corporation, not deriving any revenue on its own yet. But that's a very good point, and how to bring the deafblind community into having knowledge and access to be able to read and stay up to date on this information, other than getting the headlines that they could look through in Twitter. One thing I think, you're not the first to do classifieds, but I think the Blind Bargains classified is a neat concept in a way to help people to, You know, and it's not just Access Tech. You've moved a variety of products or helped people move a variety of products through this advertising service, right?
Yeah, we have definitely heard back from people who say they've been very successful with selling things, and we've had several people who have bought repeat ads as well. So people ask us why we didn't do it for free. Honestly, if we did it for free, I think there would be such a bombardment of advertisements coming through that it would have kind of just cluttered things up, and so that's why we put a small fee on it.
Well, I think you have to put a fee on it to, A, give it some value, right? B, getting overloaded, too much information, people, you know, trying to move things for other people and not knowing the current status of the product, if the product's already gone or not. So I think having a fee, and then, you know, less is more. I'm a big advocate of that whole concept. Less is more. Well, let's kind of look here in some of the cell phone stuff. We are a half hour into the presentation, and we may even go a little long if you guys have time. If not, we'll excuse you, and we've got a few other folks who are on deck to come in if we need. But I want to talk about some of the cell phone stuff. Verizon says no to unlimited data, especially when you're talking about LTE, which I think's so here you got all this great speed, but you're going to get capped at 5 or maybe 10 gig, or you're going to pay like $80 to get 10 gig, which is going to be nothing. I mean, if you start watching Netflix on your phone or, you know, using it for podcasts and other things, that's going to be nothing. And I just curious to see, you know, what's going to happen there.
Yeah, it's going to be if the iPhone really does come to Verizon. I mean, can they handle it? How will they handle it? That's going to be a really interesting story for me personally, because I'm with Verizon and I may end up with one, but not the first day it comes out. I can tell you that right now. I plan to wait a while.
I'm confident that there will be the iPhone for Verizon next year. There's just too many signs. You know, thank God for the internet and the open information. There's just too many signs that show that it's going to happen. I think when the big things is Microsoft just openly admitting, well, yeah, we blew off accessibility for Windows 7. We were in a hurry. We needed to get it out. We were already behind the curve with iPhone and Android gobbling up the market. But we'll get to it later. And going back to JJ's point about maybe this is the time where, you know, you either need to get in there with some structured negotiation, or do you take the attitude that I say, well, as long as I have choices, if a company's not accessible, I just ignore it and move on. But Microsoft's too big of a player not to be consistently keeping accessibility in the forefront of what they're doing. And who was it that mentioned that, you know, they've switched over? It's all part of their accessibility is part of their security division now, which should give it greater priority.
Well, maybe that'll help. Microsoft, they had that meeting with some of the political and other leaders of the blindness community a couple months ago to talk about accessibility, and that to me was probably one of the biggest jokes of the year. A whole bunch of lip service, and we're talking maybe a year and a year and a half out. The problem is this is the trend that we've had. Even with Apple and the iPhone, didn't have accessibility until version 3. And accessibility should not be a version 3 feature on any product. And we've yet to see a phone come out, you know, a smartphone, you have the Haven, but we get to see a phone come out that was accessible on day one. It took us 20 years, you know, 30 years to get an operating system that was accessible on day one with Windows 7 or maybe Windows Vista. So I certainly hope it doesn't take that same amount for phones.
I think the groundswell is increasing, though, and I think the popularity of the Apple products and the Haven, for that matter. I mean, people have to be more and more aware of the blind community as time goes on. It just has to be more obvious to developers at this point.
It won't be us, honestly. It'll be the baby boomers. They're down starting to hit 65, and we're talking millions of people here. And that will definitely be much of the impetus for this future development. But hey, whatever works.
Yeah.
Well, we see 240 million copies of Windows 7 have sold since they launched October of last year. So that's a pretty big number, I assume. I don't want to assume anything, of course. But at least you guys have moved to Windows 7, or at least have it on one box. Are you still running XP anywhere?
But I'm still running XP. I have an older computer, and in order to upgrade, I'm going to have to get a new computer. So until such time as I need to do that, and then the question, you know, is if I buy a laptop one of these days, do I get a MacBook? I really kind of like to look at one of those pretty seriously. So I'm sure I'll have Windows 7 on something or Windows 8 probably by the time I get around to it. But no, I'm still using XP.
Well, I have XP, Win 7, and the Mac, and Snow Leopard, and this box I'm broadcasting on is XP. There's still a few audio things I like about XP, though there's things I like about 7 as well. But I just, my primary box was XP, and I just haven't ported it over. Maybe when SP1 comes out, where are you, JJ? What do you have in your arsenal?
Same thing. I have laptop and desktop, so all with XP at this point. Some of it has to do with older hardware that I have that I'm not excited about replacing or not have no reason to replace at this point. Until there becomes things that I can't do with XP, I probably will be there for another year or two. They're going to support it till 2014, I think it is. So the biggest limitation to me is going to be memory, I think, eventually. I mean, I'm going to want to go past that 3 gigabyte of memory wall that kind of XP puts up, and going to 7 will solve that issue.
Now Office 365, talking about accessibility. If this gets adopted, I don't know. I haven't played with it myself. I'm told accessibility is not quite there with it. And if this really gets adopted, this whole online cloud-based concept of Office, Jamie, have you heard anything about that? Or
very little, but I'm very interested in it. Like you say, if the accessibility is there or is made to be there, I would be very interested in that myself.
Well, here's our... But I'll let you guys do it, and I'll kick back, although I'm going to toot my horn a little bit about the first one here. Cerotech stuff. iBlink Radio 2.0 just hit the iTunes store the other day, and I'm very excited about it. It's a very cool product. We've added support for other streaming technologies, so that allowed us to add quite a number of radio reading services, also some more radio stations owned and operated by the blind and low vision. And we've enhanced the favorites section of it. We have push notifications, so you can set it up if there's favorite podcasts. It'll let you know when that RSS feed is updated and you have new podcasts awaiting. And also a feature that it may be some time before you really get the full benefit of it. It's going to have to do with some partnerships and so forth. But the whole concept of localization, so that, say, for example, you go to Colorado, and then once you would enter the state of Colorado, maybe your radio reading service content for that state would become available. Some things where certain entities want to lock their content down to a specific region. Maybe you want to get your local radio stations or weather forecasts or something. So it's the foundation, certainly for SAMNET in the future as well. But have you guys played with the new
iBlink? Can you play it in streams in the background yet with version 2? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, you can have the streams in the background, yes.
Right.
I've not had a chance. I updated it, so it's on my iPod, and I intend to play with it, and actually intend to demo it for main menu, because I'm really excited about it, and I think there's some great stuff there. I think Cerotech, and I don't mean to pat you guys on the back like forever here during this Tech Talk chat, but I think you guys are doing some great stuff, especially on in the cloud. I think that's exciting.
Yeah, I don't have an iPhone here, so I mean, obviously I haven't had a really chance to play with it. I'll definitely be looking forward to if Jamie's able to review it, to check it out. And it's definitely cool to see the program evolve. I understand why I don't have one on Android yet, because I'm not developing yet for Android, because I'm just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that, definitely. And, of course, we're excited that iBlink Radio landed on the iTunes front page, and a lot of folks are a big deal. And of course, maybe it means more if it's your company, but we thought it was big if just to get Access Technology listed on the front page. And I mean, we got like 20,000 downloads as a result. So I encourage any of you working in AT, if you come up with an iPhone app and you get it on the front page, it is a big deal. I mean, it makes stuff happen. It really introduces your technologies to the sighted market, and which in turn feed it down to folks who maybe aren't online and have family members and others looking out for their best interests. The other big thing, and I appreciate that it made even the Blind Bargains top 10 here, and that's DocuScan Plus.
It's funny, I rated it and haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but I am convinced that it's a great product, and I do intend to play with it. And I think the concept, again, is a great concept. The ability to store documents on the cloud, the less resource intensive nature of the product, because it is cloud-based on, the computer isn't going to be as slowed down by scanning. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of, I'm thinking of like for K1000, you can optimize if you have a really ornery document. And I don't know what abilities there are yet in DocuScan Plus to do things like that, but you guys have just released it. So I think the only limitation would be that if you couldn't kind of really tweak a complicated document. But if you guys get that going, there's got to be some good stuff there.
Right. For me personally, yeah, we had a couple on our panel that ranked it pretty high. It wasn't on my personal list, and I think much of that had to do with kind of a wait and see, and especially for the mobile access. Once that hits, I might change my mind on that. There were some comments that were posted on the story when it hit yesterday about, as far as the computer side, we often are very quick to compare between K1000 and OpenBook, and people often forget, and I have, I'm an OmniPage user, which I paid $100 for, and it's worked very well on the desktop side. Now, that being said, on the mobile arena where there isn't a low-cost solution that works well and that's accessible, that's really where I am excited, and I do hope to see that developed in the coming year.
Yeah, that's we talk a whole bit about later about 2011 and maybe some things that we should be looking out for and advocating for. And, it's our first endeavor into that. I mean, we had DocuScan, but DocuScan Plus, of course, taking it to the cloud and, the PDF support and a host of new features. And, of course, you can go get a 3-day.
That is cool. The PDF support is cool. That's very fluid.
Yes, we have a few issues with some larger documents, so we're working on out. So always just let us know if you're having an issue or, development is always ongoing as we perfect our technologies. But really good stuff there. I found it very handy. And I know one of the big concerns people express is having your data stored in a cloud. But A, you have the ability to password protect it. B, you have the ability to store locally on your hard drive if you strictly want it in one place. But it is kind of nice to be able to retrieve it from other places when you're traveling. I know you have that important document for you there. Another one was the AE hotspot. Again, not going to be a big deal for everyone. But for those who need a technology like that to actually have a device that, of course, Accessible Event is the technology behind our tech chats, and the ability to share a Wi-Fi connection or share data in a local environment, which was one of the big reasons it was requested. A lot of folks said, we don't want it online. We're government or we're university. We want to keep it all internal. So this device allows you to do that with all the features of being 508 compliant and sharing your PowerPoint documents and spreadsheets and Word documents and everything in a local environment, which you can also still put online, so you can have the best of both local access or that around the world. I think a big one, in terms of numbers of people, would be our Build a Bundle, and I'd be curious to hear your two comments on that.
I think that's huge, personally. I really do. I mean, I think what Saratech has done there is to really make a suite of applications affordable, and that you really can pay for what you need or what you and leave out what you don't need.
Right. As far as Build a Bundle, yeah, again, this was another one that it didn't make my personal list, but actually it was really close to my top 10, and it ended up other people did rank it quite high for that exact reason. MBDA sticks out for me as being a free alternative, so it wasn't groundbreaking in that regard, but it's nice to have a low-cost solution that you also can get the tech support to come with it. You can get some perhaps better voices than you might be able to get with MBDA. One thing I would like to see, and it would be cool if DocuScan can make it on as a Build a Bundle option, unless that's recently changed, unless I knew that wasn't an option, and hopefully that's something that maybe that could be done in the future, because I would definitely be willing to pay and try that.
Well, the issue is going to be licensing, because there's no way to rent the technology for the OCR, but certainly, as always, we welcome suggestions, and people can always send your comments and suggestions. So if at all feasible, we'll certainly look at how to make those kind
certainly
of things
better than paying $8.95 if you don't have any money, as far as paying $10 a month.
True.
If you don't have $900, it's definitely a nice option.
And our final thing there, we're excited that the BBC ranked us as one of the top 5 podcasts. And granted, that's up to an individual person who came up with that list, but we're excited. We're glad to know that. We do have a good following, actually, in the UK, so we appreciate that. into the accessible media players, and again, you can chime in where appropriate. I guess the biggest one here, Amazon Kindle 3, with some accessibility, but certainly much more needed. Either you played with that device?
I have not, and I actually had a request from a main menu list member on the main menu friends list saying, would someone please do a demo of the Kindle? And I would personally like to hear that as well. I mean, we've had a lot of talk about it, but I haven't really heard an example of it. That's one of those things.
Was it one on a Saratok podcast? Or
did they actually demo it or just talk about it? I can't remember.
Mike did a really quick overview of it, so there is that where you can hear it a bit. And, of course, what I have on the screen here, Ricky Enger wrote with a collaboration with the team a pretty detailed review of it that has even gone to Amazon and hopefully will make a difference in the future evolution of the product. And maybe the bigger thing is now the books can be read online through your web browser, and maybe, you know, folks would like to take that rather than buying a specific device for that purpose. But, of course, again, our big concern, if this is going to be adopted and be a tool in college and universities, then it needs to be fully accessible, no holds bar, no questions asked, from my standpoint.
I honestly thought the blindness organizations were a little too quick to commend Amazon on the Kindle. I mean, it was nice to see that it was announced, but once you've waited a couple of days and realized what we actually got, you know, back to simple things like you couldn't register by yourself without a sighted assistance, you can't turn the text the original Texas speech voice guide feature on without sighted assistance. There's a lot of things you can't do with the Kindle yet, and it's kind of like an LG phone, you know, in the ebook reader space.
You know, that's kind of a tightrope to walk, and I've been thinking about that a lot as that whole discussion has unfolded. There's a certain amount of you want to encourage the developer as much as possible. You've got to try the product. You have to play with it and give the suggestions like Mike and Ricky have done. At the same time, you don't want to give the impression that everything is wonderful and we're just happy as we can be, when in fact there's a lot of work that needs to be done. So I think there's been a lot of debate and even a little bit of harsh debate on both sides, but maybe a little bit of creative conflict might be a way to think about that in this situation.
Do we know any blind people that tested the Kindle 3 before it was released? Because that really seems like one of the missing components here.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't buy books on the Kindle.
I don't either.
So I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
You know, they may have been under NDA, but to mine, I don't know of any. But again, I don't know everything. But yeah, that's a good question.
And
certainly in the future, we hope that would be an integral part. If that hasn't been done in the past, that there are people actually testing it out, it might go a long way to bring the device up to speed more quickly. I want to talk about the portable players. I guess before we go into individual ones, do either of you own it, any of these devices? Victor, BookSense, the newly released BookPort Plus?
I own the Victor and the BookPort Plus.
Okay, well, let's talk about the BookPort Plus, because do what, JJ, you have a BookSense? Is that what you said?
I have a BookSense, but yeah, he's got the new one, so.
Okay, well, we'll get to the BookSense here in just a minute, including the new 2.2. But so, Jamie, what are your thoughts on... You have both, or how do you compare them, or which, you know, what task do you do with each device? Or if you had to choose one over the other, which would it be?
Really interesting, because I just dusted off my Victor Stream this week and started playing with it again after having just immersed myself in the BookPort Plus for the last 8 or 9 months. I think they both really have their place, and I don't think the Stream is dead yet, personally. The BookPort Plus is great for recording. It is a phenomenal, accessible digital recorder. It has a great built-in microphone, works great with external microphones. The folder and file navigation still needs some work. Bookshare books don't play quite as smoothly. I found some repeating of sentences and lines, and I believe that's a known issue. But in my opinion, the Achilles heel of the BookPort Plus is the very low quality of the Samantha voice, and it is very low. I would rank the iPod Touch highest in quality, Victor Stream second, and BookPort Plus lowest. It's not pleasant for me to listen to Bookshare books on the BookPort Plus. The Stream is bigger. It's chunkier. It records in mono only. But it's very pleasant to listen to, in my opinion. And I haven't purchased the $49 soft pack. It's there if you want it, if you need it. You don't have to have it. It's not a life or death situation if you pass it up. So, you know, I'm not sure that the stream is dead yet.
Yeah, and I think if they roll out the... I'll let you comment, JJ. Well, first I'll say if they roll out the wireless support, which I saw at ACB in Phoenix, and I think that'll be a nice enhancement. He actually pulled down a Bookshare book, so that'll take it to the next level. But what were you going to say? What were you going to say, JJ?
Exactly. Well, that's part of the big deal with the BookPort Plus wireless and also being able to listen to internet radio streams. Don't rule out the Plex Talk Pocket. I had a version 1.0 Pocket, and it was bad. There was a lot of things wrong with it. It got a lot of negative reviews, and it was pretty much written off, at least here in the U.S. And they've come a long way, and considering that they're helping to develop the BookPort Plus software, a lot of the stuff that's getting added to the BookPort Plus ends up making it into the Plex Talk. So that's another option. The interface is a little bit different. The hardware is exactly the same. And if you have the opportunity to try one out, you may be pleasantly surprised that things have changed up a bit. The BookSense definitely had a drought as far as development this year. I think a lot of that with the takeover, which we'll get to. But version 2.2 just came out. There's some issues going on with the upgrade apparently, but it does add some support for unprotected EPUB and Open Library, which is opens up a lot more titles and a few of those requested features, being able to independently adjust the media volume from the speech. There's some little things here and there. I don't know if they're totally fixed yet. Some pronunciation issues, pronouncing all C's as hard C's, like Kirkle instead of Circle.
Oh my
God. So it's something that should have been fixed a long time ago. So I don't know if that was fixed yet in 2.2. I haven't tried that out specifically. There's almost too many book players that along with the NLS, but so far they all seem to be hanging on. The Milestone, I don't see its place, but it does seem to have a bigger international following than here. It's probably, I think it's tinier than the rest of them. It has less buttons, but nothing's selling me on that.
Something else, and by the way, I don't dislike my BookPort Plus. I feel like I'm being pretty harsh today, but one of the other points about the stream is the battery life. It really does have good battery life.
Right, so you haven't opted for the $49. I did, but at the end of the day, I'm not really using it. Well, I am for some higher quality Audible books and M4A files, some stuff that I get from iTunes or either make myself. But even with that upgrade, there's some noise in the device itself. So I'm kind of okay. But, you know, and I don't know now. I mean, I bought the Victor because it was really the first device on the market. I don't know today that I would buy one. I mean, I still got my N82 primarily in a drawer, but it handles all those, you know, most of those technologies. You have NLS players specifically for that content and the iPhone. I don't know. And I don't want to say there's not a need for it, but for me, I'm not sure that, there would be. But I think right now you add the Wi-Fi capabilities to the BookPort Plus and be able to play internet streams. That's kind of the min spec before I would go back and look at a device like that. I would expect the same functionality of phones. And a time to segue into phone technologies or innovations this year. One down sad note was of course, the loss of the life of Torsten Brand. And I got to speak with him at ATIA. And, I remember at the time feeling guilty because I spent so much time with him, and I thought there were so many other, you know, vendors to see after we finished our interview, but, you know, who would have known? It goes to show you you got to cherish every moment because you never know when it might be your last encounter to speak with someone. But he was a true pioneer, a true advocate for accessibility, never really publicly or privately, never really dogged his competition. I mean, no more than any of us. You would when we're talking, we're just looking at what our competitors are doing. But he was a good man and a true advocate for the cause. And so I don't know, while he was more on the marketing and PR side, certainly I don't know how that affects the whole Talks project, of course, owned by Nuance. But, you know, they came out with 5, and of course they came out with a version for Windows Mobile for those still staying in that platform. But
it will be interesting to see what happens. It's definitely was a sad and unexpected loss in the mobile arena. And same thing, I also had a chance to interview him this year in Florida. And very pleasant interview, I mean, especially considering that we've been selling some of his competitors' products. But he is just genuinely passionate about mobile phones and technology. And we need to remember, he was the pioneer of the talking cell phone.
Exactly, and that's important for people to understand that.
Way before people were even thinking about talking cell phones, even before the talking LG phones, there was a version of Talks that would make one or two phones accessible, and that was very exciting at the time.
Yeah, I remember Mike Calvo being one of the first in the U.S. and, of course, doing the review that aired on Main Menu. So, of course, we found links to all that stuff, and you can see that over at SaroTalk.com. I'll ask you, JJ, about
the 9290.
Yeah, 9290. Yeah. So I'll ask you, JJ, to comment. Are you selling this actual Mobile Speak 4 and Mobile Geo?
It was huge the first half of the year. It's definitely kind of dwindled down now because of later developments. It was a very well received upgrade as far as you had a lot of touchscreen phones for Symbian and Windows Mobile that weren't accessible. So that definitely really helped there. In Mobile Geo, it is a good mobile GPS product. It's smaller than carrying around a Braille Note or a Trekker Breeze, and is more feature filled than any of the iPhone or Android GPS programs at this point. So nice to see Mobile Geo still being developed. Obviously, the future is very much up in the air for Nuance and for Code Factory. While they might be able to develop software for Symbian 3, they're going to have to either figure out Android or figure out something else to do to stay in business. Code Factory did OVI Maps, which was smart considering the demise of Wayfinder. And that was another big loss in the mobile community. So things moved fast this year, and I don't think we could have predicted a lot of what happened a year ago in the mobile screen. And this will definitely be, it seems to be about the fastest moving industry out there. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year.
Definitely. If we get to hour two, I'm going to ask if either you need to leave. If not, if you can hang around, maybe we'll open up here and take some questions and wrap up on the story. Good deal.
I'm great, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and enable questions. Do either of you have any thoughts on either Sendero PC Maps or the GPS 2010? Either you played with those.
I've not.
Okay.
They're still, it is still... they're both good products as far as it's nice to finally see a PC Maps product after playing with Atlas Speaks way back when. And it's good to see them at least offer that product again. It seems like there's some collaboration there with APH, looking at the APH annual report. So it'll be interesting to see where PC Maps ends up in the next year.
Yes, we do have the article here talking about Wayfinder being discontinued. Now, can you still use it, install it? Or is it just dead in the water? What can you do?
The servers are going to be discontinued next March. That's what they say at the end of March next year. The servers will be turned off, which will effectively make it pretty much useless.
Okay, so it's good through March or some point in March of 2011. That's what
get your refunds, Matt says. If you have Wayfinder, you have a couple more months to get a refund.
Oh, really? Okay, so you can get a refund on that. I didn't know that.
Yes, you can, and that took some fighting and some back and forth, but people are actually getting full refunds and maybe even a little more than they paid originally because of the exchange rates. But that option is there, and it'll be important to find these people who bought Wayfinder and are not your frequent online Twitter, in the know people, because they might not even realize yet that until the day that the server's turned off that they've lost their GPS solution.
Okay, the Samsung Haven. I know we talked about it earlier, JJ, but I'm curious, are you finding either in your Zone BBS chats or just your general communication with people that it's being a widely adopted device?
I don't know a lot about it. Maybe Jamie, I'm not sure if he did a review on that one.
I do hear
it talked about a lot.
I own the Samsung Haven. I had an NV3, and for $50, which I almost consider free, I was able to upgrade to the Haven. It's pretty impressive. I mean, it's not an iPhone. You can't review, but it's not easy to review quickly what you've texted. that's my biggest complaint. The speech, you can't speed up, obviously. But you know what? For what it does, and for a lot of people who don't do a lot of the fancy stuff on their phones, and from being on the Verizon blind users list, that list was crazy for a while. And people are pretty happy with it. They like the Haven. And I really think it is has a niche, and I think it pretty serves it pretty well.
Yeah, still a lot of questions, so people understand. That's if you just want some cell phone access and the ability to texting and don't really care about the internet aspects as far as email and browsing the web, then that could be a device for you. If you can live with the speech and know the magic command, whatever it is, left soft 6156, whatever it is, to down arrow once and turn it enter, I think it is, something like that. And it's all in reviews. We had a review, and there's one very lengthy one up at Blind Cool Tech.
Right.
Now, what about the HumanWare Trekker here? It came out, and then they said enough. What happened there with it, JJ?
Not surprised here. They've been basing the Trekker on various PDA implementations, the Dell X51V, I believe it was, and then the HP one, among others, and just can't get the hardware for it anymore. So it's not practical for them to continue putting out that device. It was running Windows Mobile 5 and 6, Matt reminded me, and it's not practical to continue supporting that. And they seem to have changed up a little bit their philosophy with the Breeze. With the Breeze was the simple GPS solution that didn't have all the bells and whistles of the Trekker. But with the Trekker being discontinued, much of that is now being moved over, being able to enter in addresses and having more control over searching points of interest and things like that. So the Trekker Breeze is basically becoming a Trekker, mind you, minus the a lot of the Maestro features that people were using, the web browser and things like that.
Okay, here's a relay that Joe is relaying from Jeff Bishop via Twitter, saying, you guys are missing a crucial point in all the Windows Phone 7 issue. They're fighting to stay alive in this space. I thought we addressed that. That's what I said about trying to get...
I was thinking about that, honestly. I think I may have gotten sidetracked on that because there is a lot of desperation. I mean, I don't know that the lack of accessibility is their biggest problem. I'm wondering what else is going on there.
Only 5,000 apps in 3 months. That... it's really not very impressive at all. I know there's been a lot of complaints from developers or some of the terms that they've had to deal with and some of the limitations that they've had. So, yeah, we aren't their only problem.
Right.
If we didn't emphasize that enough, certainly I believe that. I think they're too little too late. I'm not sure the technology is going to stick around. That's my observation. Also, should we even care about a platform that probably will die within a year? Well, there you go. Well, I think we have to care because we can't assume what the technology will do, or we can't assume that the OS will be licensed to be put in other devices. So, yes, we do have to care. I mean, yeah, it'd be easy to go, it's going to die anyway, right. And maybe that's what I've done to just not worry about it, but that's not really the attitude that we have to take with technology.
When you made that statement, I thought you were talking about the next one on the list. With the
I did too.
It's the same thing.
And I am getting there. I'm just taking the questions here.
It's a segue because BlackBerry's market share is gone. It's plummeted this year. So, a lot of corporations are now going to be moving away from BlackBerry to Android and to other enterprise solutions. So that was the one thing that was holding BlackBerry's niche. So maybe... Horatio, it really was a big flop and too little too late there, too.
Oh, exactly. Well, Mongoose Q just relayed, Joe's relaying some stuff being sent to him on Twitter, I guess the Ranger Station, just saying that, in 2010 we have to care. We can't just ignore any accessibility to a mobile technology or any, mainstream technology, and that's what it is. But, yeah, Horatio, what? Definitely second place only to Blio for me. But really a big disappointment to say, well, we got one phone working for you, so just buy your employees that one phone, and web support, who cares, who needs it? I mean, it's my same thing with Android. It's cool, all the stuff it's doing, but if I can't browse the web, and with cloud-based services and the web being an integral part of other apps, I can't adopt the technology if I can't browse the web. Well, that's just me, but that's...
despite all the limitations of Horatio, I'm still floored at a couple of the things that HumanWare did, not being able to have any way to transfer licenses to another phone, and the $450 cost. Those are limitations that they could have overcome themselves, despite any limitations that RIM might have given them.
Let's see.
And no trial. It's just goofy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I never reviewed it. I couldn't try it.
Exactly. So, again, someone, State Mongoose Q, saying that we need to be vocal about this and, you know, and participate in articles. And I don't know. We're going to do something else in 2011. We're going to come back and do another advocacy presentation because, well, some people, that sounds like a yawner, but some people don't know how to advocate. And there's different ways to do it. And I first thought the petition was the best way because you got both blind and sighted people and it was easy for folks to put their names on it. But like someone said, it's easily dismissed. I mean, unless you get a few thousand, maybe they look at it twice or you have some really constructive comments. But if you can really get people to go to the next level and send personalized emails. But again, it's getting it to the right person and making sure they all just do not fall into a spam folder or maybe, you know, spending a few cents and sending a registered letter. But the whole concept of effective advocacy is something we all certainly need to beef up our skills on, and it's easy to get fatigue when doing something like, especially when you're dealing with governmental entities. But I think, you know, earlier we talked about the 21st Century Communications Act. Here's going to be a big opportunity where we are going to have to get involved. When we heard that the FCC was taking comments and no one from the blind, as far as I know, only the submissions from the ACB, or I'm sure maybe the NFE put something in there, but you know, if we as a community are not stepping up, but sometimes it's hard. It's marketing letting us know that, hey, it's time to take comments and what's the best way to get our comments across, and kind of hard to do if you don't have your hands on these different technologies to kind of know, you know, what's capable out there. Or someone once put it, you can't get what you want until you know what you can get. It says people need to adopt more quickly and push vendors. Well, you know, that's sometimes an issue of money. I mean, I can't adopt every technology. I can't afford it. I don't know. I mean, that was an issue, you know, like you mentioned with the Amazon Kindle. Should we went out and bought one and lived with the limitations and put our 2 cents in and our comments in and see if it made it better? Or do we say, no, I'll buy your product when you've got something to show?
Right.
You know, if you want to send me a, you know, I'll be glad to be on the beta team, and you send me a prototype unit, and we'll be glad to send it back so you're not out any change, and we'll spend the time, which is the biggest thing, you know.
And that's why I appreciate the Mike Calvos and the Ricky Ingers of the world who do a lot of that stuff and you know, are able to get that information to us and let us make some decisions.
Richard Wells says, having used the HTC Ozone with MobileSpeak 4.5, I had no problem switching to the Samson Haven. I don't miss the data plan. The only thing I miss is the QWERTY keyboard, but even the word predictor resolves the texting speed issue for me.
Interesting that someone moved from the Ozone to the Haven. That's fascinating. Yeah.
Well, I think maybe he got a touch, so he started doing things right. Internet-based, you know, and thought, well, I don't really need data when I travel. And that's the big question. Do you need data when you travel? What were you going to say, JJ?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's definitely going to be a personal preference. I couldn't give up data when I travel, you know, from a business perspective and just being able to need to stay on top of emails and orders and things like that. It's definitely important. Now, mind you, I do a lot of my data with tethering, though. So I do get around whatever limitations my current phone might have. I mean, but sometimes I'll just plug in my laptop and go from there. So,
Conrad here from Daryl Shandro. I think IDMate Summit has been a godsend for my wife, Karen Shandro, and myself, especially in the kitchen. The smaller size is huge advance over the Omni. So, and again, you know, we're just expressing our comments, and, you know, we believe certainly, and I think, JJ, maybe you had it said best, that people who already owned you know, the Omni, it was easier to go up to the Summit. It was a good chunk of change. I know people, that was kind of the one big investment that they made when they went to the convention, was that's what they spent their money on, was to get that upgrade. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the big thing is having choice. I mean, having variety, having more than one option, and, you know, things like Cyril Talk Podcast and Main Menu and Tech Access Weekly, and just ways for people to know all of the blind bargains, of course. Yeah. In written form and some audio, knowing what technologies are out there so we can make informed decisions and spend the limited number of dollars we have on the item that's going to best meet our needs, because we can't afford all of them. That's just not realistic, especially when many are overpriced.
Yeah. People are sometimes are way too quick to write off any product that's more than $50-$100. You know, oh my gosh, they're trying to take the money from blind people. But, you know, sometimes it is worth spending a little bit of money to get something that you exactly want. And we can't just write off every product that we can't afford right away, you know. There's new cars out there that people can't afford, but it doesn't mean they aren't cool.
Well, exactly. This is an interesting question. I heard that due to the technology getting better, Braille is going to become obsolete. Is that true?
Oh, that's a heavens no.
No,
heavens
no. No, in fact, I think one of the biggest stories of the year was the iOS 4 adding the Bluetooth support. And, of course, I don't think I have it on my page here, but we found a list of 57 keyboard shortcuts. So I think adding that variety of different Braille displays, and, of course, there's over 60 that work out of the box on the Mac. The biggest limiter for Braille is price. I mean, I have notes in front of me here in Braille that I do for this event, and I don't leisurely read Braille. I notice that's more of a thing that females may do over males, but certainly for labeling things. I don't think new technologies will be the death of Braille. I think that's more of it's not being taught in schools or persons get older, and it certainly does not have the place it once had. I don't think anyone could argue that, but I don't know anything about its obsolescence.
You hear that a lot from teachers, though, that don't understand Braille, so it's definitely important. Some of the initiatives that I know both blindness organizations, it's not just ACB and NFB, are all pro-Braille and for good reason, and definitely need to keep up that pressure.
There's definitely keep up the pressure. There's definitely a correlation between employment and Braille skills. And, and I think maybe people who are maybe in their early 20s, younger, just coming out of school, you know, they didn't have Braille. See, you know, some of us are old enough. I don't know about you two. Did you have computers, of course, at the time of school, or were you beyond having an actual Perkins Brailler? You know, I don't know what your education was like in high school and college.
I had a Perkins Brailler. I had some textbooks in Braille, and I, even through college, typed on a manual typewriter and hoped it came out okay. Did term papers that way.
I had both. I mean, and that just shows the melding. I typed up all my homework on a computer, on an Apple II first, and or Versa Braille as well. But I had all my books in Braille, and definitely learned Braille at a very young age. Not everyone's as lucky.
Exactly. And Michigan, I think, was one of the more pro-Braille areas of the country, from what I can tell. Someone pointed out that free apps like Noogle Noggles and Omobi, and, of course, the inexpensive color apps meets most people's needs, and, of course, iBill out on the market. So, you know, that is true. Let's see. I thought there was another question here. Anyway, let's see. I guess KNFB Reader 6.4. You played with that, JJ. That was kind of came out this year, and... I have it. I just really put my N82 in the drawer. I should post an ad on Blind Bargains and sell the bad boy as little as I use it. But I always think I'm going to need it for backup, and it's got KNFB on it. And if you no longer need the
I use mine for my mail, so all the time. I have a desktop scanner, but that's in the back room of the house. And if you bring the mail in, it's just really easy just to pull the KNFB reader out and take a picture of it. Really... It does seem a little bit like the company is a little understaffed, and you know, if they're doing a lot with Blio, what are they doing with KNFB Reader? And would like to see some more developments. They were making a lot of headway with the, you know, when they added translation and they added Braille support and things and a whole bunch of phones. Development pace seems to have slowed down a bit, and that's a little scary.
We're just getting another comment here from ILA Steve. I think, like many people, holding out for the iPhone to come out on Verizon. As I said, there's been enough indications that it's going to happen. So let's talk about some of the iPhone 4 enhancements. Now, JJ, you had one at one point, or did you go right from Nokia?
No, I never.
You just never bought into Apple?
Matt had, yeah.
Yeah, Matt has.
Matt's
it.
Our
okay.
iPhone guy.
Okay. And Jamie, do you actually, you just have do you have a touch, or do you do anything?
Right.
Okay.
I do have a touch.
Okay. So I guess, of course, 2010, bringing iPhone 4 with improved sound, better camera, though it takes a little different methodology to actually capture your pictures. But some of the things we did, I'd encourage you to check out Tech Chat 66 or iPhone 4. Is it worth the upgrade? Tech Chat 74, latest and greatest iPhone apps as of October 2010. That's important to date it because this stuff changes so, so much. But let's talk about DigitEyes, a $30 app, really had a big splash when it took off. Then later a lot on the list, a lot of people complaining about it not working very well, some of which was people not knowing how to use it, some of which was the application itself, and the update has come out. But what do you know, JJ, about what's going to happen for 2011 for DigitEyes?
I don't know much about it. I know they have improved. They came up with a version for the iPod Touch, which helps. It now supports LED flash, Matt's telling me. The biggest problem, again, is lining up the barcodes, not having the responsiveness that you would have on an ID Mate or on BC Scan or some of the other barcode solutions that are out there. I thought it was pretty telling at the NFB convention when they were doing the demonstrations of DigitEyes, but they were the one lining up the camera to demo. I wanted to hold the phone and do it myself. And Matt says it needs to be faster. Matt's just impatient.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, here's Daryl Shandro, and I kind of agree with him. He says, I couldn't give up my iPhone now. It goes wherever I go, and I use all of its features, including apps and data, to their fullest. And I think a lot of people feel that way. Now, because I work from home, it's not as big a deal. But when I travel, that iPhone, it's there. I mean, everything from making sure flights are delayed and hotel accommodations and finding good prices. I mean, just so many uses.
Well, not only that despite you do use it, but you can.
Go ahead.
Sorry, JJ, go ahead.
Well, that's my thing. I mean, despite its limitations and things that I'll say about it, it is definitely the most accessible cell phone solution out there as far as the web browsing and things like that. I joke around. I call Matt a fanboy, but you know what? The iPhone has come a long way. And until something challenges it, there really is no reason not to, not to say, hey, this is the best solution out there. For geeks like me and for some others, yeah, there are some really annoying things about its limitations, not being able to, or having to pay more to tether, things like that. But you know what? For the vast majority, the iPhone is suiting a lot of people well.
I have a question about Quitter making the top five in the Mashable Awards, and we will get to that, actually. Let's see, what else do we have here? Sendero's iPhone app. It's kind of nice. I like having something to just, some people want apps to do everything under one umbrella, and I'm okay just to have an app that provides a particular function or two and do it well. Like simply to tell me my current address and my five closest points of interest, that's a good tool. If I'm in a really large building, I know, JJ, you and I were at that event in Indianapolis, and I walked out a different door than I came in and used it to get my bearings and traverse my way around from the outside. So I thought it was a nice app, certainly not overpriced, but, that's a big issue for some folks because there's a lot of cost in developing apps. I mean, sometimes you either need to bring in a whole new programming team, or is something we're going to talk about in our tech chat next week, a particular company who has a 99-cent app and they made a $5 version for the blind and laid out his justification for that. And I know some people feel very negatively about that we'll just build the accessibility in from the groundwork. Forget the current version, just build it in 2.0. So there's a lot of debate there about how these companies can approach it. Would you pay more for an app if someone said, hey, we're making a special accessible version that's going to do everything you want to do, but maybe it's not visually appealing to the mainstream, the sighted community? Would you pay for it? Or would you say, no, I'm going to pay the same price everyone else, or I'm not going to buy it at all? Any thoughts on that?
I understand the principle of that. And, sure, in hindsight, it would have made more sense to develop one app that works for everyone. But that being said, and to be blunt, there are lots of blind people that are just way too greedy and expect everything for free. People are complaining about the Sendero app costing too much. I mean, when that's a company trying to survive, it's not like they're trying to charge $1,000 for an app that does nothing. I mean, you really need to give developers a break. And speaking as someone who's I've considered developing for various operating systems, if I know I'm going to put out an app and people are going to complain about my $5 price tag, it really discourages some from thinking about developing for these platforms if all blind people are going to do is complain about it all day. I know that's not everyone, but it is a definite vocal group that expects everything for free.
If it was an app that was important to me and I knew that the accessibility was really there, I would pay a little extra for it. I hope I don't have to do that very often. I hope that's an exception rather than the rule.
Yeah, I mean, how is that different from people buying the blindness-specific products right now that are already way overpriced? So if someone says, well, we're going to make a separate version, but it's still much cheaper than a company who's solely marketing to your genre and not subsidizing it, from the mainstream. And like I said, I noticed you had that sound in your voice because I said I thought it was reasonably priced, and some people think it's not, but at least they were upfront and said, hey, here's how much we spent and here's how many copies we need to sell to make our money back. Do people think the company should just take a loss? I mean, I think some blind people have unrealistic expectations. I don't know.
They do. I mean, it's that sense of entitlement that, you know, well, I have this disability, so I need to have things handed to me because I can't do things as well as everyone. Be quiet, really.
There you go.
And yes, you can tell I feel strongly about this, but it really is, you know, it's not a good sentiment. It reflects bad on the whole community.
Okay, one more question. We're going to go into what I think was one of the biggest developments this year. Again, another accessible product out of the box, and that being the iPad. Let's see our question. Unless it's... Okay, Peter Bosley says, we as a community shouldn't accept excuses about not building in accessibility in new platforms. The design phase is the best and at least expensive time to implement accessibility. I don't feel bad for Microsoft. Well, I'll be curious. So, Pete, what do you think about this company who, you know... Well, we'll talk about the next podcast. They put out, I don't even know what the app is, but anyway, we'll talk about that. But I don't think I'm going to buy it. I just didn't have an interest in the app anyway. iPad. Have any of you played with that? I got to play with one. I don't own it. I can't justify the investment. It would be nice. The only thing I saw that I could do an iPad I could not do with any other device specifically was the ability to see the real visual layout of a web page, a website. You can actually see with the navigation bar going down the left side or across the top. You know, it looks like some cool to be able to say, okay, the text is going to be in the center of the page. I'll just put my finger there and automatically begin reading the relevant content on the page. But as a device, I don't know, it just seemed maybe just a little thin, of course, but maybe a little too large to always be carrying it around, or I would be more interested in a full-fledged computing device, which... You know, of course, then came the Mac Air. The new Mac Airs came out. But any thoughts on the iPad itself? Do you really think it's big, or was it really trivialized because, oh, well, big deal, we already got the iPhone and the iPod Touch?
I rated it high, but at the same time, I personally wouldn't buy one. I think it's probably a pretty big deal for a lot of people. I mean, that seems to be... seems to meet a lot of people's needs. I personally would I'm like you, I would prefer a little more robust computing device and then the mobility of the iPhone or the iPod Touch.
It's big in that the iPad, and same with Apple TV next on the list, the new version, that accessibility was considered in the initial release. That is huge, and that's something we haven't seen much of before. Yeah, to me, it's just an over, and to Matthew, it's just an oversized iPod. But the fact that accessibility wasn't, you know, didn't take a year or two to have added to it, and that it was out the same day as everybody else, you could pre-order it and be part of the buzz if you wanted to, that is huge.
And of course, then the other thing, Apple TV. Not accessible out of the box, but eventually brought up to speed, so if you have the latest firmware on there, you can do that. I really need to get my hands... that's one I think I will actually lay down the money and play with, because it's cheap enough, you know, under $100 to actually use it. Although I don't watch a lot of TV, might be nice to set it up, you know, with my girlfriend and watch Netflix and things, you know, on the TV and be able to control it. So I don't know. Does that hold any interest to either of you? Or again, it's like, yeah, good thing, but not anything I'm going to actually buy.
That's kind of where I am. I mean, in my personal situation, I probably won't buy it, but I think it's great that it's there.
And it's age-old device overload. I mean, how many devices are you going to have? I mean, the average person, maybe about three devices, and they go, okay, enough is enough. You know, I don't care how cool it is, or if I'm going to buy that, I'm going to sell something else. and port over to that, because they're, you get to a point of saturation. So again, they look at it, you know, it's a vertical marketing, you know, that's something else we can offer. We'll get a different group of people. But again, those of us accessibility advocates, if we have the means, you know, to get some of those.
Yeah, it doesn't add a lot to me. You can, I mean, everything that you can do with an Apple TV already could have done with something else, as far as streaming Netflix or, you know, videos over Wi-Fi, things like that. There already were ways to do it, albeit maybe a little more cumbersome. I'm definitely holding out for, you know, talking set-top boxes and things like that. So Apple TV, it's nice that they include accessibility, but it's not a revolutionary product. It doesn't open doors that were closed to us before.
That's the key. Got a question here about bringing SAMNet content to iOS devices, and that certainly is on the roadmap. Again, going back to my comments earlier about taking more time and actually costing more in development. Obviously, when you're programmers, they're getting paid to do their work. So it's all on the roadmap, and again, part of our excitement of iBlink 2.0. It kind of sets the foundation for future directions with some of our innovations where that's concerned. Let's see. What else are we here?
I'm afraid about Salona. I think I kind of skipped over.
Okay.
This was a cool little add-on. I mean, they only cost a few bucks, $5 or $6 for the screen protectors. I know a lot of people were raving about how it made their iPhones a lot simpler to use. And so the cool little idea that just shows anybody that has an idea for a product, really, if you get the right resources, you can bring it to market and try something out.
Yeah, I saw mics on the iPad. And I'll let you comment, Jamie. I saw mics on the iPad, and to me it was a little distracting. I actually had the QWERTY, I actually had the keys, and I'm not used to having Braille under my fingers. But yet it was kind of a neat, quick orientation, because I quickly got a grasp of the spacing of the keys on the device. So I don't know if I would keep it on there, but it was a nice way to really get up to speed on where things were. And I applaud Salona for doing that and making that an option for folks who need it, and some folks love them. I don't know if I would, but again, that's all about choice. And like you said, he wasn't, you know, charging any outrageous price to have that capability. So right on for innovation. You're right.
Right. Jeff Bishop was asking me how I would stream Netflix without the speech option, I think without an Apple TV essentially, and control everything. I think what I was more trying to get to is, if I want to watch Netflix, there's nothing stopping me from setting up my laptop using an HDMI cable, putting it up to my TV right now, and doing Bluetooth. So it makes things more convenient, the Apple TV does. It doesn't open any doors. It doesn't offer me something that I wasn't able to do before, even if you had an iPhone.
Well, here's
the web interface isn't the greatest, but, you know, it is doable, even with an iPhone. Especially if you have an iPhone. I know people that have an iPhone and an Apple TV, and, you know, really, you got to pick and choose a little bit.
Well, here's an interesting concept. Rodney from Tech Access Weekly makes a comment. This company charging $5 for the accessible version and 99 cents for everyone else. Why not just charge $2 to everyone and recoup your costs?
That's a great idea, actually.
Makes sense.
That does make sense. Can we go back to Salona for a second?
Sure, please do. Yes.
You know, there's been some discussion. Apparently, he's been offline a little more lately. I really feel bad. I have a friend who works from home who I have intended to suggest that he sign up for as a volunteer, and I've not done it. And I'm wondering how many of us who really appreciate the Salona service have not done enough to try to recruit sighted volunteers. I mean, what Bernard has done for as long as he has, pretty much by himself, is amazing. And I'm wondering if he's just being overloaded and just burnt out. And, you know, can we help this guy get this service? Because people are missing it now that it's not around as much.
Yeah. And Simona and the Rave service, where you could you could send in any picture and have it just, we were doing that with the HumanWare teasers. But,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It really was a nice service.
And that was, you know, my thought, too, is why not support, you know, these overlays if it helps the project. And that's one way that you can show your support. But, right. Why not we advocate
exactly. And
get the word out and find some other volunteers to help map that? I mean, certainly there should be enough people.
Matt reminds us there's a donate button, too, on their site.
Exactly.
So you could donate some money.
But certainly we should, as a community, be able to find enough 24/7 volunteers so that he doesn't have to do only
I hate to say this, I might cut in here, but I have a question here.
As far as the solid captain convention over dinner, so that he doesn't have to do only breathing and sleeping the thing.
Okay, I got someone. Don't barge in, please, with voice chat. State your name, and we'll call on you in turn, please. Do not disrupt the conversation like that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, JJ. You were saying?
That was Jamie, I think.
Oh, Jamie, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just reiterating that he was spending a ton of time doing that service.
Exactly. Okay, under Google, I don't know what. A lot of us are down on Google. Maybe one of the first things we'll talk about. Now, you came into the Android, what, JJ, about 3 months ago? Something like that? I'm curious.
Yeah, 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay, so the sentiment I got between our two tech chats was that, wow, you know, first we're really pumped about it, but now we feel Google's going backwards and not putting the necessary components into the API. So how are you? You said you thought about coding for it. Do you think you can go there, or is Google going to have to bring a little bit more to the table before you can sit down and start building an app for it?
There's a couple big things. Touch-screen exploration is probably the biggest, especially when the newer Androids are coming with, even without the navigational keypads or controls. The arrow keys is essentially what they are. So there definitely needs to be another option. I hope Google is working on something. My biggest issue with Google currently is the disconnect between the various teams. You know, you'll have a new update. An update came out to Android Market a couple weeks ago, and it, you know, it broke some of those unlabeled buttons. That should be something that's very simple for it to do, and it just should be part of the design. I'm impressed with a lot of things that Google has done this year with Android. Intersection Explorer is a great app. I do use it a lot as far as navigating around cities and at least, you know, seeing your surroundings. Some people have said that Google needs to be more open about their future development. I'm not going to necessarily say that. Apple isn't either.
Okay, that's a good point. Okay, you got an amen to what JJ's saying from ILA Steve. I'm not sure which. We made so many comments. But anyway, amen, JJ.
Preach it. All right.
Okay, now what about this article that talks about the Eyes Free project offers Android improvements, including Internet Explorer. I can't even talk here. The walkie-talkie intersection, right, and walkie-talkie capabilities. But yet, despite that, is actually sending mixed signals on access. So we use that walkie-talkie feature?
That's basically walkie-talkie is useful. It adds a little bit to navigation. It will save you in the streets as you're walking down the street. It will ding when you're about to turn. I think it's a little too chatty. It is, you know, it's a nice little addition. It's not worth buying a phone for. It's a couple of those big things, like mail and the web. You know, those are two internally developed Google programs, and something needs to be done with them. There's a good alternative for Google Mail in a K9. And that's actually a more feature-rich program than Mail, but the web is actually probably the biggest. The calendar is another one. There needs to be more coherence, you know, and synchronicity across the different development arms of Google, and not just having Eyes Free live in their own little bubble. That's kind of how it seems is happening currently.
That's a very good point. It's not really integrated into the full-scale operation of it, or, well, Google may has no obligation to be open about their future direction, certainly opening a beta program and bringing some blind folks in to help with the development and welcome input there for accessibility, I don't think is a bad idea. You know, that's certainly be the way to go there. But anyway, we did Tech Chat 82 on Android as well as an earlier one, I think it was 68, where you can get our perspectives on Android, at least those of our participants at the time, in August, and one just mid-December. On video magnifiers, I don't know if this is something any of you guys use, other than just to mention they're out there, kind of the evolution there this year. SenseView Desktop 650, the HumanWare 360 video magnifier, and of course we did great. This is where Joe Steinkamp shared a wealth of expertise. So if you're in the market for video magnifiers, check out both Tech Chat 69 and 74. or 73. Tech Chat 69 and 73 on that, and I think we're going to do some more there. A few things in the AT space. HIM sets up their U.S. office and dumps GW Micro. How is that going? I know you said, you know, 2.2 came out, and I heard some comments about the actual README documentation, or there were some issues in getting the download, and then people start posting direct download. So, kind of, JJ, what happened there with getting upgraded?
Yeah, it was a little rough. I know there's still a couple features. I don't know what happened with their beta program, because it seems like that would have fixed a lot of that. I think part of it was HIM just wanted to get something out the door to show that they were around. You know, I'm willing to give them a bit of a pass if this is their first, you know, upgrade and having to deal with all, you know, a lot of the stuff that GW was covering before. So, you know, it's good to see that there is still a development with the BookSense. Actually, one that's not on here, but also related to HIMS, it looks like they have turned over development of their SenseNav GPS to Sendero. That's a very smart move, and makes sense to let the people who know exactly what they're doing in this area develop that product.
Any thoughts from either of you on the two stories that seem to get some buzz in the community this year concerning Freedom Scientific? First, the being denied after multiple appeals with the place marker issue. Or the actual suing the Foundation of the Blind and, of course, the U.S. government, the VA. Like, kind of, to me, it looks like biting the hand that feeds you. So,
yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of time and money and goodwill was wasted in that process. I think it sure seems to send a bad message to the community. I think it's unfortunate, honestly.
Yeah, I can understand you needing to protect your trademarks and brand identity and things like that, but it seems to be quibbling and you know, jumping at straws here. And, you know, I know we did a story a few months ago about other patents that Freedom Scientific holds, you know, for, I think there was one for navigating around, you know, list views. Like, really? That's a patent? and some...
Well, it's been proven over the last few years that internet-based patents really, most don't have a lot of salt. I mean, there are a few exceptions and a few folks doing well, but by and large, there's so many people trying to patent everything that a lot of them really don't hold up. And to spend a lot of your money, your revenue on legal wrangling may not be the best use of your time, but...
You know what? People complain about this stuff a lot, but you see people in the same breath say on Twitter, you know, man, I can't believe Freedom Scientific is another lawsuit. This is crap. All right, give me my SMA. I need to buy a JAWS again.
That's true.
Don't seem to make sense, but I know plenty of people that are doing that.
Yeah. But some people are putting their money where their mouth is and not supporting the company, and that's maybe the best way to get your point across. And again, I'm not advocating anything either way. I don't lose any sleep either way. And I, again, like you, I understand what it's like to protect your trademarks if you feel that you need to go that. But I think a lot of times you can solve some of that behind closed doors. But, you know, there's always the concern of why something like that is taking place. But question here, it says... Joe says the iPad is like a talking piece of paper, a great device for introducing low vision to voiceover. Okay, that's interesting. So, right, for low vision, Mark, and that's kind of what I thought when it came out. I thought maybe this would be the note taker of the future. You know, a device that...
It's quite possible. I mean,
yeah.
It's quite possible. I like having that. When I had a note taker, I like having that Braille input. So,
yeah.
You'd have to use an external device for that, so...
Yeah, or I imagine maybe a smaller device and actually building a Braille dock or something, and you plug it into this dock and you got Braille and, you know, all your cool stuff, and there you go. Off to college you go. As far as other note-taker stuff, it looks like Freedom Scientific, of course, released their Omni 6.5 and reduces the PacMate price by $900. I think you're going to see all the competition here. FS, Humanware, government cutbacks, and who knows what HIMS is going to get into down the road. So... Be curious to see when this note taker, Mark, and of course I think you know,
yeah.
Michael and Mikey and Michael's comments on note takers, but
yeah, there's been a fair amount of discussion about around about whether Freedom Scientific was going to continue with the Omni. So it was interesting to see another update for it. reducing the price by $900? You know, are they just trying to clear out what they have, or you know, what is the future for the Omni? It would be interesting. That would definitely will be one to watch. You might see something in 2011.
Another story here talks about the latest icon release, PDF creation, EPUB support, and I'm getting ahead of myself here. But a few folks I know who own the icon seem to be very dissatisfied. They're having problems. I guess it has some printing capabilities, or just they're having issues maintaining their connection to their wireless networks, and maybe it's just because there's more affordable devices now, but the few folks I know who invested in one of those devices seem pretty unhappy right now, so I don't know what the future is for Level Star and those products. Again, one of those things I guess we'll see in 2011 and beyond. On the screen reader front, and first, NVDA 2010.2, as they call it. Of course, improved support for Firefox, Flash, and Object support. So, JJ, why don't you talk about that? I mean, I'm pretty happy with it.
Not bad, go for it. Yeah, I mean, it's my backup screen reader, and if for the web, I think it's the best out of all of them at this point, as far as navigating some of the complex web pages that are out there. You know, some ARIA documents or things with landmarks, things like that. NVDA does really well. It certainly is, you know, not as robust as some of the other applications, but on the web, it really does impress me. They've come a long way. There's more, there's some more voices that you can get for it now. I mean, some people were complaining that they were funded by Mozilla, so they're going to develop that. So what? You know what? If it helps the product evolve, I really think that's a good thing. I mean, there's some initial support for Chrome, I know, along with System Access there. And it's nice to see NVDA continuing, and it's come a long way. And I know people that use it now as their primary screen reader, and it's nice to have that option.
Well, I was a little concerned when I heard some state here in Indiana, some folks, if they're just throwing out NVDA as an option. So I don't know if it's either cases of here's people that don't have money or no potential of a job, or here's NVDA for you. So that's my concern if Rehab is throwing it out as an option. Of course, that was a big thing when the narrator came out. Right, exactly. It depends on what they're doing. You know, can it meet their needs? Of course, there's SA to go, but the question is, can they even get on the Internet in the first place?
Yep. Exactly.
Do they have the proficiency to accomplish that? Okay, a question here. Will there be a way to access NLS books on iPod or iPhone in the future? Well, I don't know one, but it is interesting. That's a good segue to... It is interesting to see that the NLS is opening up to some third-party options. We just see the recently released NFB. It's got a long name. NLS DTB downloader, which right now is kind of buggy. I have to be honest with you. I played with it. You know, it looks like some old DOS tool that you exit with Control C. But the first time it seemed to work, and then after that it got some Java errors extracting the zip files. But essentially what it does is creates a daisy book of the various newspapers and magazines, and they do have some good content available via Newsline. And it does work. I imported it on my NLS player, and it all worked very well. But someone else pointed that you could do the same thing with Potable. So you can take those Daisy books and just copy them over to your cartridge or a USB stick and play them on the NLS player. And there's also rumors of NLS adding Audible support. So my understanding was initially they were like, no, we'll never make our content available on the Apple line of products, but who knows? Maybe things will change in that space, but we're not really in a place to comment on that because if anyone who is working on that would be under a non-disclosure agreement to talk about it.
Well, here's the thing. There's going to be a lot of things brought to the NLS players, recordings for the blind happened earlier too, and NFB Newsline and probably some others, like you said. I don't think it's going to go the other direction, mostly because of the copyright issues and contracts with the book publishers and things like that. I don't think you're going to see NLS on the iPhone anytime soon until there's some major changes, perhaps in the law, to allow for something like that. It seems like there's going to be too many problems and legal issues, and I don't think that's something they want to mess with.
Yeah,
some of those books are quite large, too. I'm wondering if you really want to do that. I mean, I guess it's possible, but...
Well, there's the verification process. I mean, it would be easy. The the geo-based services to limit it to U.S. residents, that would be very easy. But the actual, right, then Apple would have to get some proof and register all the UDIDs of the people who are eligible and make sure that only eligible people received it. And I don't think they want to go there. I think that's a quagmire. You know, it's like, why go there? Well, I'm sure it's technically possible, and so maybe people who want that should actually contact the NLS and make your request known. Maybe that's the approach you want to take. I have an audio question here, and I can't feed that through directly to Skype, so I'll play it and then relay it to you guys for comments.
Google program.
Hi, this is Mallory Sally. I hate to interrupt again.
For Google Mail,
but I have a question regarding the Samsung Haven. I'm hearing conflicting information regarding that. I was actually considering getting that phone this weekend. I've heard two different stories about the battery life on that phone. Someone told me that it had a battery life off the charger of 8 hours, and then somebody else said that it had a battery life off the charger of less than an hour.
So what's with that?
Okay, again, if you're going to ask a question, please turn down your audio. It's hard to hear. There's two questions there. First one having to do with basically Samsung Haven and battery life. Hearing reports between 8 and 14 hours. And I would assume some of that has to do with the volume level that you're listening to things and how much you're actually using speech.
You know, it's really weird. The battery seems to not behave in a consistent manner. I have had times when I have charged the phone and used speech quite a bit and had it last for a couple of days. And then I've had days where the battery would go dead within about 12 hours or so. I haven't figured it out. And apparently from reading on the Verizon list, a lot of other users are as baffled as I am. The extended battery that you can obtain seems to not yield the results that people would expect. So that is actually a rather strange situation there.
So in other words, your mileage varies.
It does.
So that's why you're getting two conflicting reports, because, you know, that people's experiences are different. And there's age-old issues of how to discharge and recharge batteries. See, I'm from the old school, and I tend to run them all the way down, which you're not supposed to do with the new ones, actually. And, you know, I'm from the old school, the memory effect, that if you, you know, just plugged it in when it had 70, 80% of life, that you actually shorten the life of the battery or, you know, diminish the cycle. It's kind of hard to retrain yourself, and I read an interesting article talking about the best way to preserve a battery, this assumes you have extra batteries, is to actually put it in a plastic bag and seal it really good, and then put it, have it charged to 40%, and then put it 40 degrees, so basically putting it in your refrigerator. So batteries in the fridge. Just hope no one gets drunk and thinks it's some snack with a little tough to eat, but... So the 40-40 rule going on there. Let's see what this question is. Daryl Chandra says, I think one more important accessibility event is full accessibility to Yahoo Messenger. On iOS, Mac, and Windows, I use it exclusively for Facebook chats now. I must plead ignorance. I didn't think anyone still used
Yahoo Messenger.
I didn't know it was fully accessible. I plead ignorance. Shame on me. I was unaware of that, Daryl.
I think it was one of those stories that I heard about, and then I was like, yeah, I use Windows Live, I use Skype, I use Facebook chat, I'm good.
I use Skype and Miranda,
I'm kind of a Miranda guy, and of course you got Facebook through Skype now, and of course I just basically post, and I do that right through the socializer. Facebook is a big concern to me. They keep modding the interface. Accessibility seems to be going backwards, and of course you can do some stuff, but not everything on m.facebook.com, and sometimes the mobile applications give a greater level of access to it, but very concerned, and of course the story that they're going to go to facial recognition, and what about those of us who don't have our eyes, you know, how is that going to work, or is it a supplement to, is it like, well, you either get CAPTCHAs, or you get facial recognition. And the people who,
I saw that when I logged in recently. It was a choice of various different.
Right. So I don't have eyes, so I can't use facial recognition, but I get CAPTCHA. Great.
You know, the thing with Yahoo, I mean, we all kind of laugh about it. But yes, it is another major company that did show an accessibility commitment, you know, across platforms. So, you know, aside from Yahoo Messenger maybe being the bottom barrel of messaging clients at this point, it is good to see that there might be other better clients out there. Messages uses IM Pro. But, you know, it is refreshing to see that. I mean, we need to have more examples of companies like that.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad to know that Yahoo Messenger is fully usable. Was not aware of it, never used it. I'm kind of like you. Maybe I'll get. I really don't know anyone using it, though. I mean, I know there are some folks because the comment comes up as far as integration with the SAMNet Socializer. So I guess you use it if you have people in that space and you want to use those tools. So I'm glad to know that. And it goes to show that no one can stay up on all of the latest AT, and maybe it's something I saw as well like you and didn't really say, okay, yeah, whatever. I don't use it and moved on and didn't realize the significance of it. So thank you, Daryl, for sharing that information. Let's see. I think we have another question here. I'm interested in FaceTime. How accessible is it? Well, I don't have an iPhone 4, and I think there are people using it. I believe Scott Rakowski's told me he has used it. So, again, well, you have to have iPhone 4. You have to be on Wi-Fi. You can't do it over your 3G network that I'm aware of. Now, when it comes out for the Mac, I believe it'll be, you know, that should roll out for the Mac in 2011. Then I think it'll be more people.
It is very accessible for the iPhone. I know Matt's used it a lot. You know, obviously, other than not being able to see the face, but hey, FaceTime does work if you want to use it. It's, you know, it is cool to be able to do video chats. At least I can see you.
Well, I just saw a story today that Skype video. Skype's come out with video for iOS. So I want to play with that and see if that goes backward to 3GS. But JJ, my son had the idea that, great, he said, Dad, put FaceTime or get iPhone 4, because if you put FaceTime on there, then if maybe you need help with something, reading something or trying to figure out where something is, you know, you could bring it up and, you know, I could help you remotely without having to drive over there. So that's kind of an interesting use that
that's
honestly
true. And there is a ban on the Mac now, apparently, so definitely see where that goes.
Or he thought even better. This is, you know, you think, well, he thought that's kind of trivial, but this was even a better one. He said, even your computer screen, he said, yeah, it's, you know, no speech, you're sitting there in BIOS or whatever. I could sit there and talk to you and, you know, walk you through it. So I thought it was very cool. So I'm all about having some means of video communications, even if we don't care about, you know, it ourselves. It has some useful potential to allow other people in that way. Let's see. What is the status of the Celonis service?
I think that's kind of where we were earlier. I'm not sure that anyone really knows. Yeah, I think that has been kind of a question on Twitter here lately.
I sent him a couple messages and I haven't heard back, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, we're down about 5 minutes. We're going to wrap it up at the top of the hour, so if there's any other questions, you can throw those out. Let's see what else we have here. JAWS 12 released with grade 2 input support, I guess with select displays. I don't have the money for one of those displays. But let's see what else here. Under Braille displays, Sika 80 and Sika Bluetooth ported to U.S. You mentioned that earlier, JJ, that sometimes the U.S. is, you know, 12, 18 months behind. So, again, we would, I'm sure, speak on behalf of Main Menu, but certainly Serotalk, we would welcome some international correspondents to let us know about other products, just like I know earlier in the year Scott Rakowski gave us a demo of their HD radio, which was far superior to what we have in the States. We also have the under Braille displays, View Plus demonstrates the Infuse Embosser. Enabling Technologies brings back the Transcend. Nine Point offers Sepra, a Braille display that comes in pieces. And Handy Tech.
That's one of those international ones.
I'm sorry. Well, yeah, you played with some of that stuff. You did more with that space than I did, JJ. Any comments on new Braille displays in 2010?
I didn't. To the 9 point, I saw the article, but that's definitely one of those that's been around Europe for a few years and has not made it over. Sika and Perkins, Matt, they need to have a little better relationship with each other. I agree with the Sika Bluetooth is just goofy because the Bluetooth box is outside of the Braille display, so that doesn't make any sense to me. It seems like you lose some of the portability there. So there's some cool developments. Actually, the price drop for the Focus 40 Blue was pretty cool. It's not on this list, but I mean that. You know, maybe we can see some more prices coming down. Maybe the whole Braille Wizard thing, that'll be a 2011 thing to watch. So nothing really impressive on this list. $1,100 braille labeler. That's just insane.
Yeah, that was like, I don't know, but we put it there as something that came out this year, but I'm like, what? As far as OCR, we have any comments on any of these? The ABIC OCR software, Perl, we have EVAS and Gorilla's Netbook OCR solution, MagniLink Go Read, and HandyTech iRead. Lots of comments. A lot of people getting in that space, but wrong time because you're hoping to dole out the government dollars. But, you know, I don't know, but talk about any of those products. I really didn't. I mean, they're out of my price range, and I'm happy with an economical OCR solution. So I guess there's a new Sarah, right, with a camera. So the camera is certainly a big thing that we're seeing, and we'll see more in 2011. Hopefully it improves the accuracy or the speed of the conversion process. But any thoughts on OCR this year? Or just a lot of folks getting into a space that maybe now when there's less money to be had? My thought.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think that about sums it up there.
Okay, we're down to about 90 seconds. We'll do final comments. I'll start with you, JJ, 2010.
I mean, there was no breakout story like there was in 2009. iPod was number one. It was simple. 2010, a lot of cool things happened, a lot of steps forward and backwards, though. And some of the top stories on the top 10 lists that you're going to see next week are definitely some of those steps backward, like we talked about. I will say this, the number one story on the top 10 was not actually number one on anyone's list. There was a lot of disagreement over what the biggest stories for this year. So 2011 is going to be very interesting going forward to see how the mobile arena develops, to see how some of these portable note takers develop.
Okay, Jamie, your final thoughts.
I think 2011 is going to be an exciting year. It's going to be really, really interesting. There are so many stories that are kind of interrelated, so much battling between products to see who can be on top. I think it's going to be an interesting ride, personally.
I agree. It's going to be a time for advocacy. It's going to be a time for maybe some shakeups. Some of the folks we think of as big players, we'll have to see. Some products that are going to fall by the wayside, and maybe, I hope, some new innovations, and maybe some names that we haven't thought of getting into the space. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
If I could, I just want to mention one thing really quickly. After the top 10, the next week we'll start the nomination round for the Blind Bargains Access Award. So those are coming up, so be thinking about that.
So check out blindbargains.com. You can, would you guys give your contact information, website. Of course, you have an RSS feed, right? You also have things you can sign up for, the daily Blind Bargains.
We have daily deals email, Blind Bargains on Twitter. We have RSS feeds for messages and for comments. And any posts that we leave, all of our top 10 stories, there's always a link to post comments. So do that, and you can start a discussion with anything that you see. And send us emails, tips@blindbargains.com. You can be anonymous if you want, and just let us know what you want to say, and we'll talk to you.
All right, and for you, Jamie, there, main menu, what's the best way? Mainmenu.acbradio.org, and it seems to be the quickest way to get there, right?
That's the easiest. You can email mainmenu@acbradio.org. The podcast feed, mainmenu.acbradio.org/rss.php is the podcast.
Okay, very good. Well, I thank both of you for hanging in here for 2 hours. I think we covered some of the good and the bad and the whatever.
Yeah,
interesting.
It's been fun.
Yeah, so let's
thank
look.
You.
All right, guys, let's look forward to 2011 and encourage all of you to stick around. We have more great tech chats and podcasts. We'll keep you up to date on the latest news, and between Cerro Talk and Main Menu, and should be able to stay up on all the cool products and JJ's reviews. So between these three sources, I'm glad to have both these guys on. I think between the three of us, you can really stay on top of almost everything going on in the wonderful world of AT. So, till we meet again in 2011, let's stay connected and stay directed.
This is Brian from Cerotech Technical Support, wishing you and your family a safe new year.
This concludes another Cerotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Cerotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.